darkness, a call rang out across the land. Lair Adams, entertainer and entrepreneur, answered the call. He joined forces with friend, businessman, and scholar, Christopher Hart. They teamed with lifelong radio pro Nostradamus. Together, they are guardians of liberty and the American way.
Ladies and gentlemen, introducing the champions of political professional wrestling, Lair Adams, Nostradamus, Johnny Guns, and Christopher Hart, the American adversaries.
Yes, it is the start of another dynamic week of political intrigue and interesting events with the best in political professional wrestling, the American Adversary Super Sunday Night Edition. Howdy, I'm Lair Adams, and I have to question the wisdom of the Obama administration dropping the number of our troops in the military, some would say drastically, and then taking troops out of South Korea and other areas, well, a total of only 3,000, but still, he's sending them to Europe. Not to fight in the Ukraine, but to train, which is BS. We're taking on their Muslim problem, which they caused, and now we may get sucked in there. Our host can only get suckered in to giving his opinion at any time. Christopher Hart!
All right, thanks so much, Lair Adams, and thank you, ladies and gentlemen, for being with us. That's right, you are listening to the American Adversaries Classic Edition as we depart on our three-hour Sunday evening tour here in Central Florida, where the skies have finally cleared a little bit today. I hope you are enjoying the weekend, and if you're watching the football game, you can certainly keep doing that, and then, of course, listen to us simultaneously. Just turn the sound down on your TV, and we'll keep those of you who can't do that updated as to the goings-on in the game. It's amazing that Johnny Guns is even here tonight, because his favorite team is one of the playoff teams tonight. Of course, that would be the, which team was it, Denver? No, Baltimore. That's right.
Johnny just said he's feeling terribly ill right now. He's going to have to leave a studio.
That's right. All right. So that was Johnny Guns. That was Carl Jackson. That was Lair Adams. I am Christopher Hart. We got Jeff Sinis on the bridge tonight, and you in the audience. And we are coming to you live once again from the Mercury Free Broadcasting Studio. Don't forget, for the best in Mercury Free dental care. In any kind of dental care, general dentistry, call my friend and my dentist, Dr. James E. Hardy, at 407-678-3399. And don't forget that our phone number here tonight is the same as it was last week in the last 4.5 years, at least that I know of, and that would be 407-774-8255. And you'll be able to use that not only in our show, but also in John Butler Book's show. And he'll be doing his show live tonight from 8 to 9 up the dial on our sister station, 950 WTLN. And then, of course, don't forget Armed American Radio live right here on AM 660 The Answer from 8 to 11, right after we go off air. All right. Yeah, we got a lot to talk about tonight. We're going to talk a little bit about Common Core. We're going to talk about the imitation game. We're going to talk about enteric fermentation. I always like it when I find a new phrase or a new word. If you guys is any of y'all familiar with enteric fermentation?
Yeah, but nope. I just didn't think you could talk about it on the air.
Well,
it's one of those gross things.
Well, you're
kind of
close. You're pretty close. We're going to talk about the BO's, Barack Obama's, that is, war.
More BO,
yeah. Well, that's his Twitter tag, right? Or something like that. Anyway, his terror war, which doesn't seem to be going too well. We're going to talk. Carl's got his corner all arranged, ready to go. We got some stories from the past. Not sure if Nostradamus is going to be with us tonight. He was having some transportation issues. But we got Johnny Guns here, of course, so he's got some WTF news stories. Sunny, our California glow girl, coming to us from Arizona tonight. She'll be with us. And, of course, Lair's got his closing comments. And we'll be playing our traditional Who Said That contest tonight. So keep that phone close by. And who knows? We'll probably even try to give away some Roxy Pacifics tonight. You know,
awesome.
This is great stuff. I was just saying, just the other day.
We haven't talked enough about them, you know.
Well, not recently. We haven't. Recently I did tangle with a rose bush, and I took some of the Roxy that I carry in my car and put it right on there, and its stuff started healing right away. And, of course, this is good for anything that irritates or is a chronic condition on your skin, which is, by the way, the largest organ in your body. And it's safe to use anywhere. Literally, you can spray it. You can use it. And that includes on your spouse, your kids, and your pets. And you can find it at fixtheskin.com. That's fix, F-I-X, fixtheskin.com. It's Roxy Pacifics, R-O-C-Z-E-Y, Pacifics with an X. And it's all natural. It's kelp-based antibacterial, anti-inflammatory solution. Mm-hmm. It's just the right chemistry to help your skin actually grow and heal.
Well, see, that's where, Chris, it bothers me that they have it listed as Fix the Skin because it does so much more. We've talked before about I've had bouts of laryngitis. And, folks, I've tried everything in the world. Nothing works like gargling with this substance. I've had people that had styes or other eye problems, and this works in their eyes. So Fix the Skin. Don't get overwhelmed with just this on skin. There's so many other things that this helps.
Yep. It's just easier to remember and spell fixtheskin.com. But they've got a special going on. If you buy an 8-ounce bottle, you'll get a 1-ounce bottle free.
And wonderful people produce this product, let me tell you.
And that's
we love them dearly.
Yeah, and that's the best deal of all because you can either give that bottle away or you can put that 8-ounce bottle in your medicine cabinet and keep that 1-ounce bottle with you wherever you go because you never know when you might need it. Like Lair said, you know, a week or two ago, I was, you know, fighting off some kind of a bug. And anytime I'd start coughing or sneezing or felt a scratchiness in my throat, I'd take the Roxy and spray it on it and would get immediate relief. And I did not, and you can go back and listen in our archive and tell that I did not come down with a serious infection. So fixtheskin.com, and what the heck, if you have not gotten a free bottle, let's try to give you one right now. And you don't have to be a new listener or a new caller. You just can't have gotten a free bottle before. So give us a call right now. You don't even have to go on the air. 407-774-8255. We'll take a couple of calls. 407-774-8255. We'll get a free sample bottle of Roxy Pacifics.
It's not a gimmick. They're not going to, you know, go to your account or do anything else.
No,
it's free.
Free shipping, everything. You know, this isn't like one of those deals where you know, you want to get that free sample of vitamins and you call up and you got to still pay for the shipping.
Yeah.
No, it's all entirely free. You give us the address, you get the bottle in the mail.
Order now. Get the second one and just pay shipping and handling, and that's a fortune for the second one.
All right. So let's get down to business now. The Cowboys were robbed. Now that we got that out of the way. I don't care what the rules say.
I'm sorry. I have to.
That ball.
I have to agree with you there, and I'm not even a Cowboys fan. That was crazy.
Johnny Guns has been at school and Carl and I on the rule book, but I swear to God, that guy caught that ball, and the Cowboys got robbed. But and they're not my favorite team either. But Johnny's more concerned with what's going on are they playing in Denver? Yeah, the Colts against the Bronx tonight. So we'll be giving you some updates on that game. Last night I saw a movie called The Imitation Game. Are you guys familiar with it at all? Have you seen any?
I haven't seen
any trailers. Actually, we went to the movies here at the Altamont 18, the Altamont Mall 18,
uh-huh.
and expecting them to have a showing, a theater with the running The American Sniper. They weren't.
Are you serious?
Really? No. Yeah,
that's a big film.
Yeah, they were not carrying
that film. It's an Eastwood film.
So, it was...
Has it run its course?
No, they have not had it there yet.
Wow.
It's still on in other theaters. And I just assumed it would be there. And, you know, what you do when you assume things, you make a you-know-what out of yourself. But the fallback plan was The Imitation Game. And I had no idea what it was about, you know, thinking of the title, I figured it was some sort of, you know, computer-generated, sci fiction type thing, you know. It was actually based on a true story about a guy named Alan Turing. Is anyone here familiar with Alan Turing?
The name
vaguely,
sure sounds familiar.
Vaguely.
Oh, okay. Well, if you want to know about Alan Turing, you'll go see this movie. It's a very interesting movie about his life and in particular about what he accomplished. Have you ever heard of a computer?
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay. He essentially invented a computer, and the why he did it is that and I'll get to the phone line here in just a second, Phil. Please hold on. He was a brilliant mathematician, a prodigy, and during World War II. Early in the war, the Brits got their hands on the Enigma device. I'm sure you guys are familiar with that.
The code device.
And this code device brought with it a reputation of being unbreakable. And that is because it had 159 million possible permutations. Okay, so that's 159 with 18 zeros, and so it would be, you know, totally a stroke of luck if they could even decipher one letter, much less a whole message. So what Alan Turing's brilliance was, and the imitation game is essentially you had to come up with a machine to defeat the machine. You follow me? In other words, human beings, you could take, it would take millions of human beings, millions of years.
Too many permutations.
Exactly. And so he devised a digital device, which was to break the code. And it was the first computer, as we know them, based on the binary system and everything.
And it was basically a fancy abacus, wasn't it, to some extent?
Well, it was a deciphering device. And even though after he built it, they discovered that there were still too many permutations for the machine to handle. It would just run on and on and on and on. And what the Nazis were doing is every day, every night at midnight, they would change the coding device.
Gotcha. Okay.
They would change the codes
for
the machine.
Which means you have to also send out the answer to the code.
So every day at midnight, there were another 159 million new permutations.
Yes.
All right? Uh-huh. And so what the breakthrough was, eventually they realized that in the messages, certain things the Nazis would say over and over again, like Heil Hitler. Mm-hmm. And they also sent out a weather report every day. And so they would give the date for the weather report every day. Oh. So now every day they had a certain number of the alphabet already that they could figure out because they knew these letters meant Heil Hitler.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so then the machine, it was much easier for the machine.
That's just like a puzzle.
And exactly. And, okay, when we come back, we'll take the phone call. I'll continue this conversation because it's going to take me into Common Core, believe it or not. When we come back, we'll talk more about The Imitation Game. It's a good movie. I suggest you go see it. And we'll take a phone call from Phil. And you too, if you like.
Yeah, you know, I kind of knew that there was a puzzle involved with taking care of these codes. And, of course, our answer to an unbreakable code. We'll come back.
Oh, and away we go. That's right, our man, Hacksaw Jim Duggan.
We hoed with him this last week.
We sure. Careful there. All right, that's Larry Adams. I'm Christopher Hart, along with Carl Jackson, Johnny Guns. We're live in the studio. Jeff sent us on the bridge. Phil on the line. He's been holding. So let's go now to Phil from Apopka. Phil, thank you for calling. We appreciate you being out there. It looks like you're going to get a free bottle of Roxy Pacifics.
It sounds good. I'm interested in finding out about it. I appreciate you guys, too.
Thanks.
All the good information you give me. But you got to remember one thing there about what you said. Now, you know Al Gore, he invented the computer. You know that, don't you?
Well, no, he invented the Internet.
Internet, there you go.
Oh, I'm sorry. Okay.
You know what? He also
something like that.
Yeah, he also invented man caused global warming.
There you go.
He didn't exactly invent it, but he sure invented great ways to profit off of it.
Oh, well,
one thing he certainly did invent was cow manure. That is for sure.
Yeah. Hey, you guys keep up the good work. Hey, I'm listening every chance I get. I like to listen because you guys are really, really telling us the truth. So I appreciate you.
Thank you, buddy.
We'll be praying for you.
Well, thank you. Well, that we need that, and I appreciate that
so
more than anything else. Thank you, Phil.
All right, bye.
All right. When people pray for us, that's really something. I appreciate that, Phil. And we appreciate you, all of our listeners out there. 407-774-8255 is the number. And if somebody else out there wants a free bottle of Roxy Pacifics, give us a call right now. The Imitation Game is an excellent movie. It's about Alan Turing, who, along with others, but it really was him. And if you see the movie, you'll see he was an arrogant, basically an SOB, as many really, really brilliant people are. They're very impatient with the rest of us.
As be their way or the highway.
Well, because they're impatient with the rest of us. But thank goodness for him. He also was a homosexual. And in the end, that was held against him in Britain. He was convicted of indecency, I think they called it at the time. Yeah. They gave him a choice. You can either go to prison or you can be basically chemically castrated. And he chose the chemicals, and after about a year on them, he committed suicide at the age of 41. That was in the 50s.
There's a book. I was wondering. Why do I know this story? Dreamers and Deceivers.
The movie I believe is based on that book. But it's based on a true story. Why does this have anything at all to do with Common Core? Because the man was a brilliant mathematician, and the way the story played out is that he and others were solicited by MI6. That's military intelligence sixth level. In other words, even back then, nobody even thought there was an MI6. They thought it was only MI1 through 5. And they had gotten their hands on this Enigma machine, and they needed to break the code. So they were putting together these people who were cryptologists and mathematicians. And he was, of the mathematicians, he was the best of them. And he was the one who realized that you never would be able to do this with human power, that you would have to devise a machine to defeat the machine. So he set about doing that. Now, how did he go about doing that? Well, first of all, he sat down in a desk with paper and pencil and did mathematical calculations and equations and sketches. And then he would post them up on the wall and kind of built the machine on paper with using principles of mathematics that go back to the ancient Greeks and perhaps even before that, the Pythagorean theorem and all of that good stuff. The binary system goes back to the Greeks. This is all basic stuff. And he developed the first computer which defeated the Enigma machine. And by the way, this was kept secret for 50 years because they didn't want anybody to know and that they had defeated the machine. And so they were faced with a huge dilemma. As soon as they defeated the Enigma machine, they immediately knew what the Germans were up to. So you would think, well, let's just go out there and they're going to attack over here, so we'll counter that attack.
No, can't do that.
Why not?
Because they'll know you figured out their code.
Exactly. So then they had to come up with a calculation to determine how much of the information that they were garnishing that they could actually use on the battlefield without the Germans figuring out that they now knew everything that they were going to do.
That's interesting. That's really interesting.
It shows you, on one hand, the brilliance.
Don't blow your intelligence.
It shows you the brilliance of what they were doing and how great a grasp they had on it. But it also shows you the terrible dilemmas that put them up against, because they basically had to decide who was going to be protected and who was going to not. In other words, who was going to live and who was going to die of their own people.
That's right. How many times?
Of the Allied forces.
Yes, how many times have they let people die so their mole could survive and go on? I mean, it's the same idea.
Fascinating story. But I thought to myself after seeing that, if Alan Turing had been brought up with Common Core, we'd be all speaking German right now. And there would never probably – computer, what's that? And because he did it with paper and pencil, and then they put together a crude machine and with a bunch of wires and transistors and things, which is basically what computers are, except it's all now on little tiny chips. And it was an inspiring story, and then it was a sad story, too, the way it ended. But very well acted. I think you would find it well worth your dollar if you were to happen to go see it.
Dollar?
Well, what your
10 bucks.
Your well-earned money, yeah.
12, 15.
Yeah, and then today in today's paper, for instance, in today's paper, it talks about Common Core and how the schools are trying to deal with it and how it's very confusing. And it is that way, I believe, by nature. For instance, take one of the math problems that they talk about in the paper today, and I'm going to read from today's Orlando Sentinel. A lesson on long division, for example, had students using repeated subtraction to find the answers. That means 42 divided by 3 can be solved by first subtracting 30 from 42 to get 12, then dividing both 30 and 12 by 3 to get 10 and 4, adding them together yields the answer 14. In other words, they've gone a real roundabout way to get in an attempt to simplify it, more or less complicated it by saying, okay, instead of dividing 42 by 3, divide 30 and 12 mm-hmm. by 3. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, so it's a longer roundabout way rather than just drawing the little, you know, bracket around it and working it through that way.
Let me ask you this, Chris. Do you think that the left, or I shouldn't say the left because some on the right are as well, proponents of Common Core are trying to help people think critically when all they have to do is remove liberalism from education in order for people to think critically?
Well, that's a good point. We'll pick it up after the break, but I don't want Lisa to have to keep holding unless she wants to. But Lisa, thank you for calling, and you will get a free bottle of Roxy Pacifics. We appreciate you being out there.
Thank you. I wanted to say hi to my daddy, Phil Harper, because he called you guys first, and he's the one that called me and told me to call you guys. But you're right about that math, man. I've got a fifth grader and a third grader, and we struggle with it every night. It's crazy.
It is crazy, and I think that's part of the focus here is rather than teaching the kids the basics, which go back thousands of years, they're trying to reinvent mathematics. They don't need to do that. It's counterproductive.
It is absolutely bananas, and I even have an old algebra teacher that was my algebra teacher. I've been cutting hair in a pop zipper.
Lisa, I tell you what, stay on the line, will you? Because we just got to go to the break. It's hard break. We'll be right back. And Johnny Guns is happy. What did the Colts just score?
Touchdown, Indianapolis. They now have, pending the extra point, a 14-7 advantage.
Look
I,
out.
Go. I told you, I don't.
All right, that's the second of the two playoff games today. The Packers won with a questionable call earlier on in the show. Welcome back, folks. You got the American Adversaries Sunday evening three-hour tour edition. Don't forget John Butler Book follows us up the dial on our sister station, 950 WTLN. He'll be live tonight from 8 to 9, and, of course, you have Armed American Radio live every Sunday from 8 to 11 on AM 660, The Answer, where you are listening to us, and or 1520 WBZW, where we're simulcasting tonight. 407-774-8255, once again, is the number. I hope you caught Carl Jackson's show yesterday morning. I must say, when he started the show off, I was just sitting down to a little bit of breakfast. I just about spilled my juice because on today's show, he said, we're going to have Elaine Benes. I go, Elaine Benes?
Did I say Elaine Benes? Are you serious?
No, you didn't. No, I misunderstood you because you went on to say Elaine Bennett, and I realized
that. That would have been classic.
But it was a very good show. What's the name of her book again?
Daughters in Danger. And I'm not saying it just because she was a guest. That book is so well written and informative. It'll make conservatives like myself take a second look at some of the claims of abuse that we've discounted too quickly dismissed.
Yeah, and it certainly gave me pause for thought, and it was a great show. And that's, of course, Carl's alive every Saturday morning at 8 a.m., and then they replay his show Saturday evenings at 6. Before we get to I got a story from the past, but I just want to go sort of finish this thing up with this Common Core thing because, you know, We constantly hear the complaints that our educational system isn't good enough and everything. I think today there was some study that showed Florida was 27th in the nation or something like that, and who knows how they stand. The point being is that let's just take football, for example. Let's just say you got a really bad football team. What do you think, Johnny, if you got a really bad football team, other than getting better players, what might be something that you might want to do to get that football team sort of all playing and working on the same level?
Other than getting new players, and you'd want to have the right coach to coach that team.
Well, not only that, too, but what would the coach coach him on? Would
fundamentals.
Fundamentals! Exactly. The basics. You get back to the basics. You push the basics. This isn't rocket science. If we can raise up geniuses like Alan Turing with nothing more than pencil and paper and slide rules, we can still do it. And in fact, that's the way we should be doing it. Kids should know how to use a slide rule. We should not be so dependent on technology that we're lost. We don't know what to do if technology's not there to assist us. And Lara mentioned puzzle solving. One of the ways it was interesting that they realized that they needed some help. And so they wanted to appeal to the public to see if there was anybody out there in the public could help them. So they put together a crossword puzzle.
Mm-hmm.
And put it in the newspaper and said, if you can solve this crossword puzzle in 6 minutes or less, you know, contact us. And then they had a sit down where they had to prove that they could do it. And the ones that could do it, they hired on as staff. And according to the movie and the script in the movie, I'm not sure if this was actually true, but one of the females who was the fastest at solving the problem ended up being one of the people instrumental on the final team. But the point being, a crossword puzzle is how they discovered the geniuses that they needed. It didn't take to divide 42 by 3. First, use a subtraction operation. No, you go straight to the division operation, right? In order to teach division, we're trying to teach them, okay, make it easy now. And so you get back to the basics, you get back to the fundamentals, and that's what Common Core is getting further and further and further away from.
Well, Chris, you know, I can understand if they're going after the people that don't get math and they've found an easier way for those people to get math, I'd understand it. But they're putting together a more complicated way mm-hmm. to do math, and it makes it harder on both the people that get it and people that don't get it.
That's the bottom line, is it's making it more complicated, and it will make it so that we have fewer math geniuses. This is my ultimate point,
mm-hmm.
is that I wonder if we'd have had an Alan Turing in World War II, if in Britain they were using the Common Core crap.
Well, and politically, you know, we all love the Bushes. I really do. I love this family. But they are so in tune to this Common Core thing, to in Europe, to so many other things that are pushing this, and
so
it's kind of a shame.
All right. Well, I tell you what, though, if you're out there and you want your kid to get an education that is good enough for Common Core and even then some, you have a chance to do it at one of the great Christian schools in the area via half-price tuition. So you can go to AmazingRadioDeals.com. If you have a child or a grandchild in your family, or you have a friend who is concerned about what they're learning in public school. And by the way, the Common Core standards also includes liberal, you know, teachings because of the way the tests are configured. So your child is being exposed to don't. You know, buy into this that, you know, the curriculum isn't, you know, being liberalized. It is. And if you want to try to do something about that, half-price tuition to schools like King of Kings Lutheran, Liberty Christian, Longwood Academy, half-price tuition, AmazingRadioDeals.com, or give Bill Files a call at 407-618-1760. Make sure you tell him you heard about it with the American Adversaries radio show. All right, Nostradamus can't join us tonight. He is en route to his house where he's been working all day. So he's going to, as he said, he's going to be a listener tonight. So that's okay, Nostradamus. We'll look forward to having you with us tomorrow. But I've got a story from sort of the past, but it'll be actually one more or less from the future. How do you like that, Nostradamus? because in the past, I think it was a month or so, this is kind of lost in everything else that's been going on. The White House has announced that they're getting ready to come out with at least 8 or 9 new serious regulations having to do with the oil and gas industry.
Oh, goody.
And this will have to do not only with the transportation of oil and gas, in particular by rail car now, because we can't build any pipelines. Heaven forbid we do anything like that. Back all the way up to the exploration for the stuff. And one of the first rules that they're going to come out with is to regulate methane. Methane, of course, is associated with manure and other type wastes, but it has also been a byproduct of oil drilling. If you've ever seen an oil rig where you see there's like a flame coming out of a pipe, okay, that's burning off methane gas.
Yep.
Because the methane gas can build up around the rig, and if somebody lights a cigarette or a doobie or whatever they do out there or causes a spark, if that methane gas is around the rig, yeah, exactly. So they flare it. They call that flaring it off. And that pretty much disposes of the methane. But the Obama administration is worried that methane gas is, of course, a greenhouse gas, and that it is something that they definitely need to be regulating. And but here is the thing. Methane is really well, let me just read from a Wall Street Journal article. What they're talking about is the incidence of methane in the atmosphere is already much lower than CO2, which we know is not a greenhouse gas, but they think it is. But the incidence of methane is much lower, and it doesn't last in the atmosphere nearly as long, even if it does escape into the atmosphere. The amount of methane in the atmosphere has actually been going down rapidly in the United States. And so you might ask, you know, why are they going to regulate it? But that's part of what the Obama administration does. But then you might also ask, well, why is the incidence, the amount of methane going down in the United States? Now I'll read. What explains these remarkable advances? Well, methane is not a byproduct of burning natural gas like CO2. The hydrocarbon mixture laymen, that's like us, call natural gas is primarily composed of methane itself. And leakage means drillers and transporters are losing the valuable commodity they are trying to sell. In other words, methane is natural gas. And so if you're flaring it off or if it's escaping into the atmosphere, that's dollars out of your pocket.
Yes.
So what are the oil companies going to try to do? They're going to try to
trap it.
And save it and sell it, which is what they have been doing with leaps in technology, thanks to guys probably like Alan Turing, who never heard of Common Core. And so the industry itself is taking care of the problem. Well, that brings us to enteric fermentation. Now, any guesses to what enteric fermentation is?
Yeah, I'm starting to kind of figure it out.
Well, you might also know it as livestock flatulence or livestock that other F word. Those emissions have been
actually... Or is it a PH word?
Those emissions have actually been rising, thanks to all you meat eaters out there. So, you know, to get your ham and your beef, you know, you got to have all that enteric fermentation going on. And there seems to be a...
And so now they're going to try to collect it, huh?
You never know.
I want to see that.
Yeah.
Maybe I don't.
Boy, if you could figure out how, you'd be a millionaire. We'll be right back. We're back, and where Johnny Gunn says if they ever go to outlawing enteric fermentation, he's in big trouble.
Lock me up and throw away the key.
And pray for the other inmates.
I'll be in for life.
All right, welcome back to the show, folks. You are listening to The American Adversaries. That was Johnny Gunn. I am Christopher Hart, along with Lair Adams. We're ready now for Carl's Corner. So, Carl, take it away.
All right, everyone. Thank you for tuning in to the American Adversaries today. And for those of you that are familiar with or have used the products Bengay and Geritol, this this subject may bring some happiness to your life. At least I hope it does. I think it is a good start for the GOP anyway, regardless of how you might feel about entitlements. So Now that you've heard the word entitlement, let me get to the article. The article is entitled, and it is from the Heritage Foundation, the Daily Signal. The House just made it harder for politicians to steal from Social Security Fund. Now, here's the deal. House Republicans nearly unanimously adopted new rules for the 114th Congress with House Resolution Number 5, which set the stage for long overdue Social Security reforms to protect disabled Americans and seniors from indiscriminate benefit cuts. The new rule strengthens the integrity of Social Security's separate trust funds, disability, and retirement. This is crucial. By putting a procedural barrier in place to prevent lawmakers from raiding retirement funds to shore up the bleeding disability trust fund. Page 32 of House Resolution 5 that you can find online adds a point of order against weakening either trust fund unless the changes result in an overall improvement to Social Security combined trust funds. If lawmakers allow the Social Security Disability Trust Fund to run out of funds without reforms, disability beneficiaries would face an indiscriminate 19% cut, which would lower the average benefit to below the federal poverty level. Now, here's what I have to say about this. First off, the GOP should be shouting this from the rooftops as early and as often as possible, and even when they don't need to. I'm not a fan of entitlements, but let's face it, guys. We don't have people in office that are going to get rid of Social Security. And for those that have spent virtually a lifetime paying into Social Security, I'm sorry, I don't feel it's right to take that from them if that's all they've counted on. However, for new up-and-coming generations, this is something that I believe this is a good step, right, to eventually reforming Social Security. So this is a good first step, and the Republicans can gain the rhetorical upper ground on this, so I hope they do just that. Now, Treasury Secretary Jacob Lew suggested Congress simply reallocate the funds from the Social Security Retirement Trust Fund to the disability one. Well, of course he would, because they know that many of their constituents are the new people marginally disabled. So, of course, he would advocate that. The problem is the reallocation would delay much-needed reforms to the disability program plagued by fraud by many who have been encouraged to, let's say, become permanently dependent despite only being marginally disabled. In other words, you have a bunch of people that have no business receiving disability, and not just temporarily, but on a long-term basis. So that's why this plan is key, I believe. And actually, I don't give the GOP, I really try to bite in the into the GOP as often as I can, simply because I want them to do better. But I can say, I believe this is a good first step. Let's see what comes of it, but this is a good first step. Now, not to mention Obama and Lew would have to raid the retirement in order to strengthen or to help sustain disability. What would have to happen is what I've already said, essentially, is that they would have to continuously, not just one time, but ongoing raid Social Security retirement to keep paying money to people, deservingly so, that are legitimately disabled. But in the last several years since President Obama has been in office, we've seen an exponential increase in the amount of people that have come on the disability. The numbers are outstanding. I forget, I don't have the exact numbers in front of me, but please trust me when I say the numbers are absolutely astounding. And we know that, I'm sorry, not that many people grow disabled within one presidency term. It just doesn't happen. So in order to make Social Security, or keep Social Security solvent, as well as disability, we have to separate them, if you will, in order to protect them, in order to protect and manage and to get rid of fraud. So less fraud. This will mean less fraud and mismanagement from politicians. Essentially, this will mean more accountability. It'll be easier for us to hold politicians accountable. So this is a good thing. Retirees, like I said, shouldn't have to worry about a bunch of lazy numbskulls that are stealing their hard-earned benefits. So that'll help in that case. But last and not least, it's what I mentioned when I first started, is the fact that this sets the stage. If we get a bold president, if we get some bold leaders, it gives us a bit of hope, because if we can separate the two, where they're two separate trust funds and there's accountability, now all of a sudden we can start making a case to wean future generations off from Social Security. So kudos to the House. Kudos to this House Resolution number 5. I'm not a fan of entitlements, but like I said, this is a good start. Let's just pray they go further.
All right. Thanks, Carl. Let's do hope that they go further. They also made some changes in how the budget is scored, too, that should help to protect Social Security going forward. All right. First of all, you're absolutely right. It's a good first step, but I hadn't heard about it, and I guarantee you, if you were to poll our audience, you wouldn't find too many other people out there, and they're pretty well informed who have heard about this.
I found this on no media sites except to go to think tanks.
Yeah, and I didn't see it in the Wall Street Journal or the New York Times.
Yeah.
And I might not expect to see it in the New York Times, but I would expect to see it in the Wall Street Journal. Maybe they'll have an article or an editorial in this coming week.
Unfortunately, that's a great point, Chris, because that's part of my fear.
Yeah, well, and that's part of why people listen to the American adversaries like Phil earlier, because they're going to hear stuff here either before or not that they're going to hear anywhere else. You know, and it used to give me cold chills, or not cold chills, but goosebumps when I'd hear the big old Rush Dog talking, you know, days or weeks later, saying stuff that we'd said on the show. Now it's sort of routine.
Yeah.
I swear. And not to brag, but to brag. But the point being here, and this is something I've talked about on the show before, and Carl said they need to be screaming from the rooftops about this. No, this is one of the things that the Congress should be doing that day. Somebody should have gone down to the well of the Senate and onto the floor of the House and given a speech essentially explaining what they did that day. That would have found its way into the media. There would have been an official record in the Congress made of it. C-SPAN would have been there. Now, you might say, well, like Ron Johnson told Lair and I, Senator Ron Johnson from Wisconsin, when I brought this up to him, told Lair and I, well, nobody listens, nobody watches C-SPAN. Well, yes, people do watch C-SPAN.
Yeah, they do.
And I'll tell you, some of the people who watch C-SPAN are people at MSNBC. And they would love to have the Republicans. It's great fodder for them. And see, that gets it into the stream. That gets the Republican argument into the stream. Even if it's being presented by the other side, it still gets the argument into the stream. And then people begin to ask questions. They begin to want to know more. At some point, the Republicans got to get up and stand up and speak. And I'm not talking about John Boehner and Mitch McConnell, both in their own way this week, crying because Barack Obama has threatened to use his veto pen. And he did it on the same day that they were all getting sworn. Oh, well, I'm sorry, but that's the nature of politics. Obama's just playing the game, and he's playing rough. So you're going to be a couple of crying weasels? This is why I say Mitch McConnell's a poodle. You know, he went out there and he whined. That's not what people want to see. They want to see answers. He should have went out there and either said nothing about the president, but say, well, here's our answer to your vetoes, Mr. President. We're going to continue to put the pressure on you, sir, and we'll be happy to do it. Instead of whining about, if you're going to whine about the political machinations and the political game, the political sausage making, what we call the professional wrestling, political professional wrestling, whether you're in the wrong business. Whining doesn't doesn't elicit confidence in your followers, us, right? We want strong leaders, not a bunch of whiners. And that's all we got right now, unfortunately. And so, no, they don't speak up, and Carl's absolutely right. They do need to do it, and it would be just so easy every night. Mm-hmm. You're already there. Just tell one guy he's got to stay sober for a couple more hours, right? Then he can go to the cocktail parties. That's all we're asking. One guy in the Senate, one guy in the House. Every night you're in session. It should be a responsibility. The Democrats take advantage of it. Why in the world can't we do the same? And quit crying about Barack Obama. He's a tough politician. If you haven't figured that out by now, once again, you're in the wrong business. Okay, folks, we got a lot more to go. We're just getting warmed up. Don't forget, you're listening to The American Adversaries.
Which you can do six nights a week, always at 5 o'clock. Except for Saturday, of course. American Adversaries will be back for segment two. Coming up.
When America fell into darkness, a call rang out across the land. Lair Adams, entertainer and entrepreneur, answered the call. He joined forces with friend, businessman, and scholar Christopher Hart. They teamed with lifelong radio pro Nostra Dennis. Together, they are guardians of liberty and the American way.
Ladies and gentlemen, introducing the champions of political professional wrestling, Lair Adams, Nostra Dennis, Johnny Guns, and Christopher Hart, the American Adversaries.
Hour number two of the American Adversaries 3-hour Sunday evening classic tour edition. Welcome back to the show, folks. And you are listening to us coming to you live on AM 660 The Answer and 1520 WBZW. Of course, we'll be here until 8 o'clock. A lot of good live radio even to go after that with John Butler Book up to dial at 950 WTLN, our sister station. He'll be live 8 to 9. He always has a great show. Great word man, wordsmith, and great mind, brilliant mind. Also, Armed American Radio will be live 8 to 11 right here on AM 660, The Answer. So you got a lot of great live radio right here, only right here every Sunday night, folks. You will not find this anywhere else in the Orlando, Central Florida metropolitan area. All right. This is Christopher Hart, along with Lair Adams, Carl Jackson, and Johnny Guns. We're going to talk this hour about the war on terrorism, in particular Barack Obama's war on terrorism. I don't even think he calls it that, but we're going to call it that for him because it is not going so well. You know, when Barack Obama came to office, basically it was us against al-Qaeda and, well, the Taliban in Afghanistan, right? And both in Afghanistan and in Iraq, we had the upper hand. In Iraq, we had won the war thanks to George Bush and the surge and the Arab resurgence there where they cooperated with us. And the reins of all that was handed over to Barack Obama. Of course, we know that he basically because he didn't want to, you know, be bothered with the issue, he allowed the issue to get to the point where we had to pull all of our troops out of there because we didn't have any security of forces agreement, which Joe Biden had guaranteed us that we would have. And as a result, Iraq is now has cascaded into the pits of hell. And if you don't think so, just you know, read some of the stories as to what ISIS is doing there. Oh, yeah, ISIS. Who were they? Where were they when Barack Obama became president of the United States? They weren't around, or if they were, they were just some off-the-wall, you know, nothing organization. Carl?
They were around. They were the al-Qaeda leaders that President Obama claimed he killed.
Yeah. And now they have a whole army, and they are having people flock to them. And what about Boko Haram? You know, this past week, while everyone was focused on the attack in France, and we're going to get to that here a little bit later, let me just tell you what was going on in Nigeria. What was it now? 14 people, I think, total, and that includes the hostages that were killed a couple of days later.
16.
16, okay. Well, in Nigeria, Boko Haram, on the latest rampage, killed about 2,000 Nigerians. Okay, for the same cause, the same MO, the same mentality. It was a massacre. As a matter of fact, it happened in a town called Baga. There was a meeting going on there between officials from Nigeria and Chad and Niger. And just happened to be, I guess, in the wrong place at the wrong time. That or Boko Haram had some pretty good intelligence of their own, because they went in there and they killed all of them, and they killed all the villagers, everyone that they could. And they did this over about a week's period of time. In other words, for the people who escaped the initial killing spree in the village proper itself, they tracked them down. They hunted them like animals. You know, like a safari. You know, it's Africa, safari country, right? And that's just in that little region there. And then, of course, you had all the goings on with ISIS. And then you have, there's, what's that other group? There's Boko Haram. I mean, there's so many groups, I'm losing track of them now. And they all have festered into major organizations, any one of them rivaling Al-Qaeda. And Al-Qaeda's got its own little resurgence going.
Yeah.
And Al-Qaeda in Yemen has been a problem, festering problem for some time, and now it is now a huge problem for us and the French. And this has all happened on Barack Obama's watch. And what is his strategy for victory? Does he have one? No. The best we hear is he's got some sort of strategy of containment of ISIS in Iraq and Syria. Well, what about Boko Haram? What about Al-Qaeda? What about all these other groups now that are growing? And, of course, you still have the Taliban. And guess who now is who's trying to get in on the quote-unquote peace negotiations between the Taliban and the Afghani government? This'll warm your bones.
Al Sharpton.
No, but at least it would be American.
I know.
The Chinese. Yeah, that's all we need now is for have the Chinese.
That's about as ridiculous.
The Chinese to increase their influence in parts of the world where they haven't been before. And so all this is happening on Barack Obama's watch. And he has been able to get away with it, at least up until now. Carl, you've been wanting to say something.
Let me just say, just going back to this point that you just made about the Chinese stepping in, I couldn't help but to, I know you guys saw the news this morning with the 50 world leaders singing Kumbaya in France and all that.
Yeah.
I couldn't help but to think those 50 world leaders wouldn't have to be there if one nation would stand up.
Well, yes, but I will get to that, because one nation can lead the way, but one nation can't do it all itself. And in that sense, I guess I'm verging on agreeing with Barack Obama, because he has essentially said that. But when have we ever tried to do it all by ourselves? Maybe in Vietnam, but even then we were working with the South Vietnamese.
And we took over for the French.
But if you look at World Wars I and II, if you look at the Korean War, if you look at the Gulf Wars, I say in plural, if you look at the war in Afghanistan, these were all wars carried out with, guess what, a coalition.
Yeah, and my point wasn't to I worded it wrong, because my point wasn't to say the United States, one nation versus that wasn't
right.
My point.
Yeah,
but my point was the United States normally leads the world.
Right.
And I'm sorry, the world follows us, and if we're fighting terrorism, guess what the rest of the world all of a sudden wants to do? So now China comes in. China is wanting to fill the vacuum that the United States once filled. And with President Obama's help, they're going to do it.
And that's exactly right. Mm-hmm. And that's the danger of what Obama's doing. See, he thinks that if he backs off and acts nice, that people will reciprocate. That is the most naive way of looking at the world that you could have, and the most dangerous. Because, no, the bad guys don't reciprocate by becoming good. They just take advantage of your weakness. and step in, as Carl said, to fill the vacuum.
And in the world of capitalism, you don't allow someone else to come in and take over your territory or step on what you're doing or whatever. The whole idea is to grow your stuff, and to heck with them, I'm sorry.
Unless you want to put yourself out of business.
Yes, exactly.
Which is basically what Barack Obama is, his strategy, is to put the United States out of business, right? And thinking that, and let's just give him, let's just assume that, that this isn't some sort of maniacal, devious plan to destroy the United States. Let's just think for a moment that he actually believes this. It is more in line with the liberal naivete, if you will. Liberals, above anything else, are very naive, and they believe that their solutions would work, and if only people would get out of their way. They don't understand that their solutions fail because they're bad solutions.
And it's the world of what I want rather than what is.
Exactly, and that's what leads into the naivete. It's that childlike simple-mindedness. You know, if I want it, then it's right. It's good. It should be that way. And so that's what we're dealing with here. So he has no strategy. He has no – you never hear him say the word victory, you know. And so we, of course, are left with the bad guys filling the void. So I don't expect, by the way, to get any better over the next couple of years as long as this guy's president. But what I do see happening is other people in the world are beginning to figure out that, at least for the time being, they can't wait around on the United States. They're going to have to do it on their own.
Yeah, because he's going to be crowing about our pulling out of Afghanistan and Iraq as a victory.
Right. And what happened in
pulling out is a victory.
What happened in France today, the Kumbaya moment, you know, was all just, you know, for show. But what the French officials are beginning to say heartens me. Gives, you know, it warms my heart, no pun intended, because I believe it was the French defense minister today said, and I believe also, no, it was the French prime minister, excuse me, it wasn't President Hollande, but it was the French prime minister said, we are in, speaking of the, not just France, but the Western world, we are in a war against Islamic extremism. Now, he went, he's you might say, well, he didn't say very much, but actually he did.
Way more than the president would say.
And way more than any of the other Western officials have been saying. He said, we, meaning the world, the Western civilized world, is at war with Islamic extremism. He actually used the word Islam.
Yeah.
He put his finger right on the problem. This is actually a huge step. And it will put the pressure back now on old Mr. Reluctant, Mr. Zero, Barack Obama, that if the United States doesn't lead, the French might just do it, and or the British, or the Germans, or the Swedes, the Swedish people. And so at some point, it will become, the political pressure will begin to build on Barack Obama that he actually might have to step up and do something about it. And he will be reluctant. He will fight it tooth and nail all along the way. But something I believe happened in France this past week that sort of was a, I don't know if it was a big game changer, but it was at least a small game changer, maybe a big game changer. And you're going to have to stick around for the next segment to hear what in the world is this guy, Chris Hart, talking about now.
That game changer, huh? Speaking of game changers, Johnny, what's happening with that game? Is it a changing?
14-10 at the halftime, Indianapolis leads.
All right.
For all you football fans out there, American Adversaries, we'll be right back. Because if you don't, you might get stung. Well, of course, that's what happens to people that don't inform themselves of the facts. We are the American Adversaries. We try to spit out the facts. And just the facts. Larry Adams with you. Christopher Hart, Carl Jackson, and Mr. Johnny Guns himself, while Jazzy Jeff is in the studio running the board. And we're talking, speaking of people and Muslims and all that kind of great stuff over in France, Carl, you were saying something about, a friend of yours was saying, hey, it's done in France. It's, well, they just, they've let it go too far already.
Well, not a friend of mine, but Andrea Tanteros, I believe, on Fox News, and I'm sure a lot of gentlemen wish she was a friend of theirs. But
amen.
But the truth of the matter is, she said she lived in France for a number of years. She speaks French fluently, and just being an American overseas in France, she was twice attacked on the street and public by one time a Muslim couple, another time by a Muslim man from Yemen. And she said, thank God there were a couple of people brave enough to step up and stop the physical attack that was taking place upon her. Otherwise, she quite possibly would have been dead. And what she shared was the Paris and France in general is overrun with Muslims as it is. And they're having numerous babies while French people are not having babies. And the people that aren't considered the... I'm sorry, I don't buy into the extremism nonsense. The people that don't consider themselves Orthodox, is what I would say, are too scary to speak up.
Too scared,
to speak up. And the ones that are the killers and the ones that consider themselves Orthodox Islam, they will kill them in a quick second. So I'm sorry, France, I'm glad you're speaking up. It's just too little too late.
Yeah, and I'll bet the abortion clinics there in France don't abort any Muslim babies.
All right.
Just the others.
Man, that's a great point.
Well, that's kind of what I want to address, because if it's too late for France, it's probably too late for the Western world, because France is, if nothing else, it's sort of a test case. But I want to address some of what you're talking about there. And by the way, the other group I was trying to think of was Al-Shabaab in Somalia, which has really grown under the Obama administration. But I asked Carl to look it up on his computer, and he said, what do you mean, Al-Nusra, the Al-Nusra Front? And there's another one. You know, these are all terrorist organizations that were either very small and ineffectual when Barack Obama became president or didn't exist at all. ISIS now was probably the most potent one, but they were not anything at all what they are today. And Carl's showing me a list, a whole other list. The list just goes on and on. It's as long as your arm. You talk about a rap sheet, man. This is long. Whoa. And this is all happening under Barack Obama's watch. Now, he had us believing, you know, in the last election that he had ended the war on terror. Actually, he's the one who got, who was that fella he got? Oh, yeah, Osama bin Laden. And and all the while, the problem has festered and gotten worse and worse and worse. Instead of capturing and interrogating suspects and suspected terrorists, he kills them with drones.
Which wipes out your information base they could have given you.
Exactly. And, of course, we know that, you know, blowing people to pieces is a lot better than waterboarding them one time or two. We all know
and
that.
And their families, too. Yeah, they're the collateral damage.
Yeah, we all know that's much more humane.
Well, and also, Chris, look.
That gives the Americans, you know, much more great prestige in the Islam community.
And,
what
did you say about Gitmo? Gitmo is nothing more than a recruitment tool.
Yeah.
Well, they don't seem to have any problem recruiting people the more people he lets out of Gitmo.
By the way, now that you mentioned Gitmo, what was it, 2 or 3 weeks ago, Lair, that I said on the show here that my only prediction for the new year was that Barack Obama was going to close down Gitmo?
Yeah.
Well, according to the official who just resigned, who was in charge of closing down Gitmo, Barack Obama is this year going to close down Gitmo.
I'm sure of it.
And he said, do not doubt Barack Obama's, determination to do this.
I believe when you look at Gitmo, it's indicative of what President Obama's foreign policy is going to be for the remaining period of time that he's in office. And I don't recall who to attribute this to, but if someone on radio and they were spot on, basically the man intends to do nothing and pretend as if America was a safer place. The world, America no longer needed to be a part of the world wars, if you will, and as a result of his presidency.
Well, didn't you hear his speeches this past week? And by the way, one of them he gave in Phoenix, and Sonny's going to brief us on
right.
that. But, you know, the United States is resurging under Barack Obama and his policies, didn't you know?
He gets a little bump in financial news, and all of a sudden everything's better.
Now, to get back to your point about France— first of all, Let me address the issue of Islam itself and the peaceful or the so-called moderates, as opposed to what you call them, the orthodox, or as the mainstream media calls them, extremists. How are we going to deal with all of that? I have said on the show before, and I said in one of my blogs this past week, which you can find, folks, at AmericanAdversariesRadio.com, that if it's up to the Muslim community to do something about this problem. If they want to leave it up to us, that's fine. But if they leave it up to us, the problem will be dealt with guns and bullets and missiles and things. But the Islamic community itself has the opportunity to clean up their own mess, which is basically what this is. It is their own mess. And there is a prominent Muslim who does get this and has been now saying it himself. I want to read from you some excerpts from a speech. This was given December 28th by Egyptian President Abdel Fattah al-Sisi at the university in Cairo. He gave it at Al-Azhar University in Cairo. And it was translated by Middle East Media Research Institute. I'm just going to read you about three paragraphs of it. This is now General al-Sisi, the president of Egypt. I am addressing the religious scholars and clerics. And he's talking to the Muslims in his country. I am addressing the religious scholars and clerics. I'm going to read this fast. We must take a long, hard look at the current situation. I have talked about this several times in the past. We must take a long, hard look at the situation we are in. It is inconceivable that the ideology we sanctify should make our entire nation a source of concern, danger, killing, and destruction all over the world. It is inconceivable that this ideology, I am referring to not religion, but to ideology, the body of ideas and texts that we have sanctified in the course of centuries to the point of challenging them has become very difficult. In other words, he's saying that the teachings of the Quran have made it very difficult for anybody to question it. It has reached the point that this ideology is hostile to the entire world. It is conceivable that 1.6 billion Muslims would kill the world's population of 7 billion so that they could have it all on their own. This is inconceivable. I say these things here at Al-Azhar before religious clerics and scholars. May Allah bear witness on Judgment Day to the truth of your intentions regarding what I say to you today. You cannot see things clearly when you are locked in this ideology. Please bring the music down, Jeff. Bring the music off. You must emerge from it and look from outside in order to get closer to a truly enlightened ideology. You must oppose it with resolve. Let me say it again. We need to revolutionize our religion. Honorable Imam, you bear responsibility before Allah. The world is entirely awaits your word because the Islamic nation is being torn apart, destroyed.
Welcome back to the American Adversaries Live this Sunday evening. I am Carl Jackson, sitting in studio with Christopher Hart, Lara Adams, Johnny Guns, and we have Jeff Sinis behind the glass, and what up, Nostradamus? Anyway, before we went to the break, Chris was talking about something that happened in Egypt. The gentleman speaking out, that's going to have, I think, huge ramifications.
I think this is what we need to hear. And this is the kind of people we need to be hearing it from, leaders in the Muslim community. Now, he's the president of Egypt, General al-Sisi. He's the one who deposed Morsi, the Muslim Brotherhood president. And let me just read this last paragraph again, because I ran out of time and left a sentence off. He's talking to religious leaders at the Al-Azhar University in Cairo. And he finishes up here. He says, Honorable Imam, who is the Grand Sheikh of Al-Azhar, the head of the school, you bear responsibility before Allah. The world in its entirety awaits your words because the Islamic nation is being torn apart, destroyed, and is heading to perdition. We ourselves are bringing it to perdition. And this is the seed of the solution, you see, because think about what he's talking about. There's 1.6 billion Muslims in the world. So they're either going to kill all the rest of us or we're going to kill all of them. It's inconceivable that we can do that, that we should do that. We should have other solutions. And the other solutions always come from within. And the real solution, if there are quote-unquote moderate Muslims, you are the ones who have to solve this problem. Because as I said, if you do not, then you are, as Carl said, you are no longer a moderate Muslim. You are a part of the problem. If you do not take efforts to clean up your own house, well, the neighborhood association's going to have to come in and do it for you. And that's the rest of the world. And it will be done with a lot of killing. And out of all of this killing that's been going on, what group has died the most? What group has shed the most blood?
Muslim.
Muslim. Exactly. Al-Sisi has got it right. The Muslim religion is destroying itself. In its efforts to conquer the world, it is conquering itself. And eventually the West will wake up and the West will mash them down, just like we've shown we could do. It can be done. We just have to have the will to do it. Even if we have the smallest navy and the smallest army since, what, prior to World War I, we could easily ramp it up, just like we did in World War II. What can the Muslim nations do to match what we can do? It would be like the North against the South in the Civil War, where the Western world is the North and the Muslim world is the South. They can make our lives miserable for a few years, but eventually they will run out of arms, they will run out of ammunition, they will run out of resources, they will run out of people. Al-Sisi has it right. Either the Muslim community will save itself, or it will participate in its own destruction, which is what it's doing right now. And if he's willing to stand up and say this, now perhaps other Islamic leaders will be willing to do the same. I'm not going to hold my breath for a long time for any, you know, huge snowball effect. But this guy's getting it right. And along with perhaps a change in attitude amongst the Western world, then maybe we can really deal with this issue. And that brings us to tonight's Who Said That contest, because tonight's quote fits right in with everything that we're talking about. You folks know how to play this. It's real easy. Johnny Gunn's over here is having the time of his life. What's the score, Johnny? What's going
Indianapolis
on?
Indianapolis Colts touchdown, 20-10.
All right. The Colts are up to, it looks like they're going to go up 21-10 here in a second. Third quarter action. We'll keep you updated on that. Tonight's Who Said That contest, folks. You know the rules. We read a quote. You simply call us up and tell us who said it. You'll win the cachet of prizes, which, of course, includes a $20 gift card to Cafe Positano, only the finest Italian restaurant in all of Central Florida, and a My Liberty Threads t-shirt, American-made, American-proud, MyLibertyThreads.com. And tonight's quote, I believe, fits right in with everything we're talking about. Now, I'd like to have somebody new or someone who hasn't won for a long time. So you regulars kind of sit back, at least for a time being. And this may be pretty easy. I don't know. We'll see. But I think it fits right into at least where I'm going to say, I'm going to use it as a segue into the next part of the conversation. Here's tonight's quote. If you know who said this, give us a call at 407-774-8255. And if you've not gotten a bottle of Roxy Pacifics, we'll throw one of those in too. Who said, to be a liberal, you have to stand up for liberal principles. It's not my fault that the part of the world that is most against liberal principles is the Muslim part of the world. If you know who said that, give us a call, 407-774-8255. Looking for somebody who hasn't won for a long time or who hasn't never won.
And kudos to this person for recognizing that.
Yep. To be a liberal, you have to stand up for liberal principles. It's not my fault that the part of the world that is most against liberal principles is the Muslim part of the world.
I give John Boehner credit and props for having the courage to say that.
He's too busy whining and crying about Barack Obama. Oh, golly. To be a liberal, you have to stand up for liberal principles. It's not my fault that the part of the world that is most against liberal principles is the Muslim part of the world. That brings us to Paris.
All call right. If you know who said that, folks.
Yeah, 407-774-8255. $20 gift card to Cafe Positano and My Liberty Threads t-shirts. And real quick, while we're on the subject, I apologize to some of you winners over the last 3 or 4 weeks. I have fallen behind. I ran out of gift cards, and then I ran out of shirts. So I had to resupply on both. If you have not gotten your prize yet, you will get it this week. I promise you that. So pardon me, and thank you for your patience. And whoever wins tonight is going to get it this week, too. So, Paris. Let's think for a second what happened in Paris and then what has happened since Paris, right up to the Kumbaya meeting today, the big, huge march in Paris, where I believe Benjamin Netanyahu was also part of it as well.
Yeah, he was.
So there was a show of solidarity there. Were there any United States officials in that?
Eric Holder was there, but I never saw him.
He was in Paris for a meeting, but I don't think he was part of the march. I'm not sure.
You may be right.
But I have not seen any photographs of him. He was all over the morning news shows this morning, though. What happened in Paris? Okay, on the surface of it, it's very obvious. These terrorists raided that news organization and shot a bunch of people there and then carried their mayhem on for a couple more days. Well, okay, let's examine news organization. All right, this was Charlie Abob or whatever.
Hebdo.
Abdo. Charlie Ab. Charlie.
Charlie
Abdo. Exactly. And who was Charlie Abdo? Let me put it this way. What political persuasion was Charlie Abdo?
Liberal.
Big time liberal persuasion. I mean, these guys criticized everything, especially religion. They criticized all
religion. No, sir, you're wrong. They do not criticize liberal organizations and what they do.
All right, well, they criticize everything conservative and everything religious, and they have been very adamant about it. And so what has been the reaction since these liberals were shot to death? Well, we're being told how they were heroic, right? What they were doing was heroic. They were brave. They were brave souls to stand up for freedom of press, right?
Sure.
And what they were doing in that country would never have happened at the New York Times or the Washington Post until the terrorist act. In other words, they never would have published those cartoons, would they have?
Thank you. Thank you. I'm so glad you're saying this, and I'll echo Mark Stein as well. There should have been equal opportunity discrimination when it comes to free speech. I mean, for God's sakes, Charlie, I don't know how you pronounce it, Hebdo or whatever.
Charlie Hebdo.
Other papers didn't share in the courage, if you will. So it made Hebdo an easy target. I mean, they were singled out. And, you know, regardless of how you feel about it or not, free speech is free speech. I'm confident as a Christian, if we live in a nation where there's free speech, I'm confident that Christ will prevail. That's just the way I am. That's the way it should be. I believe that's the way our Constitution is written. Free speech is free speech, and you win people by the power of persuasion, not by coercion.
And any true religion invites criticism. It invites ridicule because it only proves the religion's truth and value. Don't you see? All of the things, the criticism and ridicule Christian has suffered through the years, has it made it go away?
No.
It's only made it stronger and made the belief in people stronger.
And this is in a country that doesn't have a guaranteed freedom of speech.
That exactly right. You're absolutely right. And so, but now, by the way, the Washington Post has published some cartoons this weekend, and we put them up on our Facebook page. Thank you very much, Nostra Dennis. And by the way, the Wall Street Journal also on Thursday published one of the cartoons, a very small version of it, on their op-ed page. I'm going to pass it around now to the guys here in the studio. It looks like something out of Hanna-Barbera. It's actually kind of cute cartoon. But, you know... back to my point. So I think that I mentioned before the break that this may have been a bit of a game changer, if not a big game changer. The game changer here is that liberals were attacked for being what? What were the liberals attacked for being? What were they being? What
liberal?
Were they doing at the magazine? They were
expressing their free speech.
They were being liberals.
Yeah.
They were attacked for being liberals. You understand where I'm going with this?
Yeah.
Liberals are finally getting it. that they are hated by the Muslim community every bit, if not more so, than Christians and Jews. And this is the game changer. Liberals are finally getting the picture, I think, Carl.
Yeah, quite possibly. It's a great argument. You can take it as far as to say France, the nation of France, if you will, is the supreme example of liberalism
right.
in every shape and
right.
facet of the word.
Right.
And their decline is also part of that.
And look at the response in France to this. There's been article after article in the New York Times worrying about the backlash that is rising in France.
Sure.
The people of the French, the true French, are getting sick and tired of this nonsense and saying, we're not going to put up with it anymore. You remember the movie? You know, I'm sick and tired and I'm not...
Mad as hell, I'm not going to put up with it anymore.
There you go. Right. And so... And what it took for liberals to be attacked for being liberals. Do you understand the dynamic
sure.
of what happened in Paris? For liberals out there, suddenly it was like a 2x4, or as I said the other day, a tutti frutti up against the head. These people hate us because we're liberals.
Yeah, yeah. All of a sudden, the cops out there are carrying guns.
Yeah.
Go figure.
So I believe that this at least has the potential of being a game changer. I got to go to the phone lines right now because we've had a couple of callers waiting. We first of all have someone who thinks that they know who said to be a liberal, you have to stand up for liberal principles. It's not my fault that the part of the world that is most against liberal principles is the Muslim part of the world. Let's go to Grace from Apopka, who thinks she knows who said that. Hey, Gracie.
Hi, Chris. How are you?
Excellent. You?
I'm fine, thank
Great.
You. It's good to be back and to go on your program once in a while.
Love it.
I don't think it is, but I thought someone once told me that Chris Christie said something like that.
He
wouldn't surprise me.
It wouldn't surprise me if he said something like it. He's not the author that I'm looking for.
I figured you were going to say that. Yeah, I figured you were going to say
that. Well, I tell you what, though.
What?
Make sure that, well, no, don't go away.
No.
Make sure Jeff has your information, because if nobody gets it right, you'll be declared the winner because you took the first guess. You took
the
first
step. Okay. I'm listening to you until you're off the air at 8 o'clock.
Okay. Well, thank you, Gracie.
Okay. Stay well, the both of you.
And you're not you're not disqualified. If you figure it out or want to take another shot at it, call
okay.
us back.
All okay.
Right?
Thanks.
Thanks
okay.
for listening, Grace.
It was not Chris Christie, but this person does have sort of a grating sense of humor, you might say.
Hey, that was a good liberal guess, too.
Yeah.
All right. Let's go now to Mike from Longwood. Thank you, Mike, for calling. Did you want to take a stab at the contest?
Yeah, it's Bill Maher.
It is Bill Maher. You're absolutely right. Did you hear him say it this past
that
week?
That was easy.
Yeah.
I did. Actually, I have some T-shirts I want to have printed, but I can't repeat them on the air. But but I also wanted to say real quick, Winston Churchill said the further you can look back into history, the further you can see into the future.
Yep.
And right after 9/11, I was telling family and stuff that Islam, this extremism is the same as, it's a death cult, and it's just like the Japanese were, and they're like, yeah, so what's that mean? And I said, well, we dropped a bomb on Hiroshima, and we said, do you surrender? And they said, no. And so a few days later, we dropped one on Nagasaki, and we said, do you surrender? And they said, well, you know, maybe. And they said, no, you're going to surrender, or else we're going to do it again. And if, by the way, you're not going to have an Army, Navy, Air Force anymore. We're going to run your country, and your Air Force is not a god. And they said, oddly enough, they said, okay, 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 okay. And we snapped them this out of this malaise of death cultism. And I think right after 9/11, we should have done something with neutron bombs. Remember when they came out, you know, they kill the people and leave all the property still intact?
Yes, yeah, under Jimmy Carter, yeah.
Yeah, out in the desert somewhere near Islamabad, near Riyadh, near all these places, just near them, not mass killing, and just said, hey, take care of your problem or we'll take care of it for you. And this would have been solved.
Yep, I think you're right. All right, thank you, Mike. We'll
okay,
be right
thanks,
back.
Guys.
Okay, thanks. Congratulations. It was Bill Maher who said that. We'll be right back, folks. Okay, welcome back to the show, folks. And that last caller, you know, he was talking about the neutron bomb. I was a sound guy for, sound and lighting guy for a band. Some friends of mine had a band this back when I was in college. And they would write the cleverest tunes. And they wrote this this song. It was done to one of the B-52s melodies. And they called it Neutron Bomb. And it went something like, Neutron Bomb, everybody wants one. Neutron Bomb, the Pentagon's got one. Neutron Bomb, the people they die, the buildings they stay. I wonder if we still have those things around, you know? Nobody ever talks about them anymore.
Would that be a Jimmy Carter campaign song?
Well, that was during Jimmy Carter's era.
Yeah.
By the way, one of the places that Mike mentioned that we should Neutron was Riyadh. Now, Riyadh is in Saudi Arabia.
Yeah.
And that brings me to the next part of the conversation here, because there's something else going on in this whole effort, if we want to call it that. I call it a world war. And that's, by the way, what the left is now beginning to figure out. And I was hearing voices on the morning shows this morning saying, in essence, this is a worldwide conflict now. In other words, they're beginning to get the picture that we're in a world war, whether we like it or not. You know, when you have groups all over Africa, all over the Middle East, now in Europe, Asia, I mean, there ain't many places left, right? Okay, so Saudi Arabia is, I believe, conducting its own war against the United States. And we are seeing the effects of it every time we go to the gas station. And everybody's thrilled. Everybody loves it. And believe you me, I love it when I go to the gas station and I put 20 or 25 bucks in the car and pretty much fills it up.
Unless your 401k is in oil.
Then believe you me, that's the other end of it. That sure enough does sting. But that's the point I'm getting at. The Saudi Arabians, and we had a caller here a couple of weeks ago who called and posed this question. She didn't go on the air. I believe it was it Marty that called that night? Anyway, she posed the question, what are the Saudi Arabians up to with the price of oil?
Mm-hmm.
The Saudi Arabians are basically conducting an economic war. They are mad. They are mad because we have basically been cutting off their funding. How have we been cutting off their funding? By drilling and acquiring our own oil and resources. Okay, in this country, even to the point now where we have excess capacity, where we're actually exporting gasoline. Now, we're still not producing enough oil for our own everyday needs, but it's much greater percentage than it was before, and it's put the it's pinched their profits a little bit.
And natural gas is just around the corner.
Right. And so it's pinching their profits. Now, they still got plenty of money. So why would they be mad that their profits are getting pinched, especially since the United States is one of their quote-unquote biggest allies against Iran, for instance? We provide them with all the most modern of military equipment. Why would they be wanting to do this? Well, what have they been doing with all of this money that we've been giving them? Besides building up their own country, what have they been doing with it? This is something also I've been talking about on a sort of a different but related topic over the past couple of weeks, about churches disappearing but mosques being built. Mm. What now have the Saudi Arabians been doing with
expanding
our
funding
Islam? Terrorism?
They've been building mosques all over the United States with our own petrodollars. And in these mosques, hatred is being taught of the United States and the Western world. Saudi Arabia is a huge part of the problem, I'm sad to say. And what they are trying to do is cripple the energy industry here in the United States, is what Larry is referring to with the 401ks. They are trying to bankrupt energy companies here in the United States. Now, I don't think they are realistically thinking that they're going to put BP or Exxon out of business, but they can sure enough put smaller companies out of business. The companies who have been actually doing the lion's share of the work of finding and drilling and acquiring all this new oil. A lot of smaller companies are probably going to be looking at bankruptcy over the next year or two. This is what Saudi Arabia wants.
And they'll find no sympathy from the Obama administration.
Oh, no. But think of what has been driving the economic growth over the period of time that the president, all this resurgence that he's talking about, has been driven by the energy industry. Texas alone, while Barack Obama's been president, 1 in 7 of all those millions of jobs that he's been talking about that's been created have been created in Texas alone, and the vast majority of them in the energy complex. And they are getting hit hard. The Saudi Arabians are trying to destroy the American economy. They know what they're doing. And guess what's going to happen when all these bankrupt energy companies here in the United States who are giving us $2 a gallon gas aren't around anymore? Guess what's going to happen to the price of gas? Do you remember the energy crisis? You're back in the 70s? OPEC will be back. They will be badder than ever before because they will have really crippled the one true source of power that can defang them, which is the energy complex here in the United States of America. Saudi Arabia has been given a pass in all of this. Somebody needs to take a real hard look at them. All right, when we come back, we got, what's it, 7 o'clock already?
Wow, yeah.
It's time for Sunny.
For Sunny.
Yep.
When America fell into darkness, a call rang out across the land. Lair Adams, entertainer and entrepreneur, answered the call. He joined forces with friend, businessman, and scholar, Christopher Hart. They teamed with lifelong radio pro Nostra Dennis. Together, they are guardians of liberty and the American way.
Ladies and gentlemen, introducing the champions of political professional wrestling, Lair Adams, Nostra Dennis, Johnny Guns, and Christopher Hart, the American adversaries.
Yes, we are the professional bad boys, excuse me, of making you feel good. I got choked up
Getting choked up here. Must be because of our next guest.
Well, who knows? Lair Adams here with Christopher Hart, and that was Johnny Gunn speaking, along with Jeff in the studio for us. And here in Central Florida, everyone knows we had kind of a cloudy, rainy, misty day today. Nothing really pretty. And then all of a sudden, folks, the sun broke through. It was sunny. It was bright. It was wonderful. And here she is on the phone. Sunny, our California glow girl. How are you, beautiful?
Hi. My gosh, I love that introduction. I am shining bright today with a little bit of paint on my fingers, I might add.
Oh, good, good. It's always good to show off your artistic side.
You paint models or walls?
Walls. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Well, hey, Sonny, this week, a lot of big news. First of all, what was the reaction in and around Phoenix to the goings-on in Paris? Did it garner a lot of attention, I mean, just from local people talking?
Yeah, of course. I think everybody's saddened and shocked, you know, because it was in Paris, and it was on all headlining news and here in Phoenix as well. Yeah, it was very heartbreaking. And
did you at all talk to any of your friends from Los Angeles and what their reaction might have been?
I did not. I really haven't. Didn't get a chance this week. But I'm sure it's probably worldwide, guys. You know, how can you not? It's scary because if it's able to hit in Paris, that means it's next. They keep saying Los Angeles. You know, it's a good thing. Again, I'm in Phoenix just in case because I don't want to be shot down. But let's hope nobody does, you know. But these guys are just infiltrating everywhere, aren't they?
Well, yeah, and we've been preaching about it on this show for a long time. And, mm-hmm. But it seems now to be dawning on the rest of the world, in particular with this attack, because this was a news organization. So, of course, this is going to make all the other news organizations perk up. And they were attacked for cartoons. And so...
Well, also, too, the people that warned that something like this could happen have also been attacked by the average person here in America. Oh, no, that could never happen. But it did.
But it did. Yeah, and that's what we always say, don't we? Oh, no, it's not going to happen to me. And then when it does, it's too late.
Mm-hmm.
You really can't even say it because you're gone, you know? It's like, oh, shoot. And that's it's really sad. I don't know if they caught the... Was it the female suspect?
They have not yet, as of the time we went on air, they had not yet caught the young woman. There are some fears and speculation that she's already out of the country, maybe even already back in back to Syria, where evidently some of these people had been coming and going from. So it highlights a lot of problems that are endemic to Europe. In other words, if you get into any of the European Union countries, it's very easy to get to go to the other countries with very few security checks. Obviously, guns can be smuggled into these countries, weapons that can be used against the inhabitants. But I think it was a wake-up call. For people not only in Paris, but I think it was a wake-up call for people around the world. We do a little contest right before you come on the air called the Who Said That Contest, and tonight's quote I pulled from Bill Maher. Now, Bill Maher has been on this for this train of thought for a while, where he's talking about Islam being a huge threat to liberal principles, much less, you know, other religions. And but it seems that now finally others are beginning to fall in line with his line of thought, his way of thinking. Liberals, you know, before kind of, I don't think, saw the threat as directly as, say, Christians did. But I think after this attack in Paris, I think that that sort of mindset is beginning to change.
I think it's woke up.
Right. Yeah, exactly.
Everyone.
Now, having said that. Do you think that what they were doing, that the because it is offensive to Muslims, that they shouldn't have been doing it to begin with? I'm talking about these artists.
You know, again, it's freedom of speech, freedom of art, freedom of drawing. And comic is exactly what it is. You know, it's for a laugh. It wasn't on a serious premise, I'm sure, that all these wonderful artists weren't intended on specifically, how would you say, knocking them down. It was just, in my thinking, it's just comical, like we do our penis characters. And unfortunately, they did use Muhammad, I guess, right, in a lot of their stuff.
Well, why, unfortunately, they do it with the Christian religions and
exactly,
Buddha and everybody.
Ones. Yeah, no one's targeting them like, of course, these guys. I don't think these guys need a reason. But
unfortunately,
they attacked them first, and... you know, and Paris is just, you know,
well,
that was just a shocker.
Yeah, but you just said something. You don't think these guys need a reason. And there's a great deal of truth in that. In the sense that they already have the reason. In other words, they don't need a reason like the guy drew comics. All the reason they need is that they're not Muslim. There was a an interview that was shown on, I believe it was Face the Nation this morning. It was one of the Sunday morning talk shows. And it was of a man who I believe he was from a European country. I want to say Holland. And as a matter of fact, he had been in that country's military. And they showed a picture of him while he was in the military. He had the, you know, the short, real short crew cut haircut. And he looked, you know, he was clean shaven, and he looked like he was real tough, and he looked like a soldier. And then they showed a picture. They showed him in the interview now. And he looks like he's a Taliban. You know, he's got the long beard, and he had the head wrap and everything. And he said it like this. He said, and he was talking about the killing and the warring. He says, "It will never end. This is our religion. This is our faith. This is what we are supposed to do."
Yeah, and that's their mindset.
That's their mindset.
Exactly. That's their mindset, and that's the way it's going to be. That's why I feel that this it's not getting any better, and it's only getting worse. And the more we push, the more they pull, and vice versa. And I think it's just going to, you know, kill more of our wonderful military that are back there that are fighting. I don't know. It's scary, guys. It really is.
Well, Sonny, let me ask you a question. How important is it to you to have freedom of speech? People don't understand. America is really one of the few countries on the planet Earth that guarantees freedom of speech. France doesn't. I don't think Britain does.
No.
And to me, this whole thing is about that one thing. And really, I'd like to see these other countries say, we now are going to adopt a guaranteed free speech.
Yeah. Well, you know, in terms of that, you know, it is the First Amendment that is the one for freedom of speech and freedom of religion. And that is because our founding fathers saw it as it is
the most important.
The most important.
Exactly.
If you don't have that, then none of the other ones. You can't have any of the other ones. If you cannot have freedom of debate in the political arena, then you cannot have any of the other rights that we so much cherish.
Well, we're on the radio, guys. That's what we're doing now.
Yeah.
And hey, you know,
people would want to shut us down.
Like what we're saying, but you know, oh well, too bad.
Yeah.
Everyone has their own individual voice, their own individual mind, and their own heart.
Yeah.
And in my opinion, those guys back there are pretty darn heartless.
Yeah. Well,
they do and the way they're raised. And I think that's just all garbage. And they need to get in this era, the here and now, and quit it. You know, and of course they're not, because just like that guy said, this is the way we are. This is the way we believe. And we're not changing.
Yeah. Well, what is changing, I do believe, though, is the attitude in the West. And I think this attack in Paris had a lot to do with it. Before you came on the air, I said what was different about this is that these people in Paris, they were killed because they were liberal cartoonists, and they were being liberal cartoonists. That's why they were killed. This is now ringing with liberals around the world who have been sort of dismissive and blaming the West for the terrorists. And so now that liberals were killed for being liberals, it's sort of a whole new ball game for them, I think.
Yeah, you can't blame it on America.
Exactly.
Right. Exactly,
and it happened in the heart of a socialist country, France,
who has been
very accommodating to Islam.
Right.
And so the French are like, you know, look, we treated you with a lot of respect and a lot of kindness. We've welcomed you in our society, and this is the thanks we get for it. At some point, even the stupidest of people wise up, and if you slap them around enough, I think that they'll finally get it. And I think the liberals are finally getting it. And that will be a game changer. It will be a big game changer, because with that will gradually, not right away, but gradually come the will to actually deal with this problem in the manner that it needs to be dealt with. Sonny, the president was in your neck of the woods. He came to Phoenix this week. Amidst all of this going on in Paris, he was going around the country on a pep rally tour. How did it go in Phoenix?
I guess it was pretty good. His speech was good on the housing economy and bringing it back, and he was all for that. But, you know, guys, he went through the roads of Phoenix and hopped on the 51. He, however, sadly and disappointed a lot of people here because he did not stop in the VA hospital.
Yeah, where, of course,
right
there's been
it.
the VA hospital where there's been so much controversy and the patients who died because they weren't getting care.
Yeah.
And this is what I'm talking about, though. The president, he's going around, he's touting some good economic numbers that have come out, which I expect him to do. But at the same time, he was not responding to a very seminal moment in this war on terrorism, if you will. And I don't think that the United States showed enough support to France in this situation. We could have been the president. I think it would have been wiser for him to sort of drop what he was doing to provide more, if nothing else, moral support to France. But the president is a politician, and right now he's got some good economic numbers, so he wants to get out there and tout them.
Yeah.
All right. Well, you're right, though. It was disappointing that he did not make a stop at that VA clinic.
He was at a high school, which was nice. He greeted some high school children that were, allowed in the Coliseum and stuff. Actually, I think they had to buy a ticket. Gave a good speech and all, but
yeah.
Another interesting thing that happened up north in Napa Valley, speaking of the French, want to go with the French Laundry. Something happened up there that I'm going to report on, which you brought to my attention. Of course, I happen to like wine, and oh boy, this is some good wine. But a 3-star Napa restaurant got taken to the cleaners, last week when thieves made off with the bottles of rare, expensive wines, including a 1999 Burgundy, worth almost $8,000.
A bottle. For 99?
A bottle, yes.
A 99?
Yeah. Yeah, this this was a caper. It was pulled off on Christmas Day,
Christmas Day, yeah. The intruders broke in on Christmas Day. And
what was
the popular store farmhouse restaurant.
What was it called?
It's called, let's see, it was in Ulitol, California, first of all.
I think
it was closed for renovation.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
And it was called The Laundry, wasn't it, or something
yes,
like
French Laundry.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's why I said take it to the cleaners a little bit.
I got you.
Yeah. Although owner chef Thomas Keller, who is described as only American-born chef to have three-starred Michelin restaurants, he was devastated. And he said, you know what, there is a silver lining to this. The wines are so well-known and expensive that they are likely to raise questions, you know, when someone's out there trying to sell them, the prospective buyer, so to speak, the thieves.
Yeah.
He Instagram pics of them and also a picture of the broken entry of the door where they had actually gotten in. But the wine bottles, check this out, are among the purloined wines. And there again is a 1999 Domaine de la Romanée Conte, worth $7,950. Wow. And a 1988 bottle worth $5,750. And a 2002, which I personally like, Screaming Eagle, sounds so interesting, that sells for $6,500. All the wine.
God.
Oh, yeah.
Screaming Eagle.
Amazing, amazing. So these wines, if a connoisseur gets their hands on it, it's going to open their eyes and say, wait a minute.
Well,
you know,
let's just hope some police officer doesn't discover them in some abandoned house somewhere where some homeless guys
are. I'll take a glass, please, of every one. Where's my cheese and crackers?
Yeah, so much for the mad dog. We'll take the good stuff, right?
Yes, exactly.
All right, great work, Sunny. We really appreciate you. Have a great week.
Thank you. You guys, too. Big sunny hugs and sunny smiles this week.
Okay. I feel warm now.
And keep a wet rag with you to keep your hands clean of that paint.
That's right.
We'll be right back.
Bye-bye.
Goodbye. We'll be right back, folks. All right. Welcome back to the show, folks. That's right. You got the American Adversaries for another little over half hour. And then, of course, John Butler Book picks it up at 8 o'clock up the dial at WTLN 950, our sister station. And then
Armed of America.
Armed American Radio from 8 to 11 right here on AM 660, The Answer. Johnny Guns, what's the update on the game there?
It's 21-13. I'm pretty nervous now because the Colts are notorious for, you know,
blowing it,
putting it on their defense, and the defense lets them down. But the Colts are driving. They're in the red zone. And if they score, that puts a lot of pressure on Peyton Manning. Only 6 minutes and 30 seconds left in the game.
6:30 to go in the game. The Colts are driving up 21-13. Okay. As I said, John Butler Book will be coming up here shortly. I just want to sort of finish this conversation about this Islamic threat and what happened here in Paris and compare it to the Benghazi attack. Because after the Benghazi attack, of course, we were told that it was caused by what? It was caused by
a movie.
The movie video.
Right.
Now, even if that were true, and we now know that it wasn't true, it was so stupid for the president and the secretary of state to make that argument.
Chris, they didn't just make it. They manufactured it.
Well, not only that. Well, yeah. But why was it stupid to do that? And why did it actually sort of lead to what happened in Paris? Let me just read. This is from an op-ed in Thursday's Wall Street Journal, where they show the little cartoon that was on the cover of the Charlie Hebdo. It's talking about what they did for Benghazi, blaming it on the movie. They say, this is exactly the wrong signal, since it implicitly legitimizes illiberal offense taking and sends mixed messages about the West's commitment to its core values. In other words, what Obama and Secretary of State Clinton did was say, our First Amendment right isn't that important. Right? Yeah. What they, in essence, said, they said, oh, this was this horrible video, never should have been
allowed.
Yeah, and we're going to apologize for it, never happened again, we're going to put the guy in prison. He had every right to do what he did. And by the way, I saw the thing, and it was crudely done, and it was sort of Monty Python-ish, but it was quite accurate. And I believe that's why, if anybody in the Arab world was the Muslim world was upset about it, it was because of its accuracy. But what the president and first lady should have done, of course, was not concoct that as a reason to begin with, as Lair said. But if it had come up, they should have said, "Well, that's just too bad." I mean, that is the I'm sorry, but these folks are going to have to learn to live with the rights that we enjoy here in the United States. We're not going to do away with our First Amendment rights in this country because it is offensive to somebody over there. I'm just very sorry. That's the way it's going to have to be.
And they did cherry pick that movie to fit this particular situation.
But the whole point was that they blamed it on anything like that.
Yes, yes.
The response should have been, I don't care if it was a video and you were upset by it. That was no reason to kill Ambassador Stevens and three other Americans, or anybody else for that matter. All right, let's go now to Diane from Apopka, who wants to talk about Obama and Paris. Diane, thank you for calling.
Happy New Year.
Same to you, young lady. How you been?
Good.
Good, good. Glad to hear from you.
I wanted to let you know that CNN just came across and said that 50 nations were represented in Paris except for the United States.
Except for the United States.
That came from CNN.
Yeah, well, that sounds about right. As we were talking in earlier, Eric Holder was in Paris today for some meetings over there.
But he did not go to the rally.
No, he did not.
No.
And it just goes to show where this administration's mindset is, even as the rest of the world is beginning to figure this out and understand that whether we like it or not, we are in a world war against these people.
Mm-hmm.
And until we begin to deal with that reality, we're not going to put together the type of strategy it takes to deal with this. No. And believe me, once the Muslim world begins to see that the rest of the world is mobilizing against it, guess who's going to all of a sudden figure out that they got a problem they need to solve on their own? It will be them.
Yeah, and that's what I was going to ask you, Diane. Do you think maybe this administration really is a little pro-Muslim?
You think?
I mean, really? I mean, that they're willing to put it out there blatantly.
Your error is...
He is afraid of them because he is one of them.
Well, I was going to say, is the error is to think that it is a little bit pro-Muslim. It is very much pro-Muslim. And in their naive way of thinking, what they're thinking is, see, America's been, you know, anti-Muslim. If we're just pro-Muslim, that'll show, you know, everybody that we're just trying to be nice and we're not this colonistic, imperialistic nation anymore, and everybody will be nice to us then.
Yeah.
That's where they're coming from, and it's just idiocy. Hey, Diane, I want to thank you for joining the American Adversaries Army. I look forward to, and I'll be contacting you this week to find out when we can have dinner with you.
Second easiest recruitment I ever got into.
And the first was the United States Army?
That's right.
Thank you. And we are honored to have you in our Army, and we so very much appreciate that you are anxious to get into it.
And I'm recruiting people all over the place.
Thank you so very much.
You're the best.
And we're going to get you some captain's bars right away.
Oh.
Well, Diane, thank you. God bless you. And thank you for listening to the show. We really appreciate it.
God bless you guys. Love you guys.
We love you too.
Thank you so much.
Thanks. And by the way, folks, if you would like to enlist in the American Adversaries Army, go to our website, AmericanAdversariesRadio.com, and it's real easy. Just follow the prompts. And we'll be right back.
With SRN News, I'm Gordon Griffin. It's being called the largest demonstration in French history. Masses of people joined with world leaders to fill the streets of Paris on Sunday in a rally for unity. Hundreds of thousands more marched in cities around the country and the world to repudiate a three-day terror rampage against the French capital that killed 17 people and left the three gunmen dead. Joint Chiefs Chairman General Martin Dempsey says the hacking of Sony Pictures demonstrates that the military superiority enjoyed by the United States doesn't necessarily carry over to the cyber world. Dempsey, who serves as President Obama's chief military advisor, tells Fox News that the U.S. has peer competitors in cyber warfare. Idaho police say they have found five guns and a laptop computer in the vehicle of a man suspected of killing three people in a shooting rampage yesterday. More details at srnnews.com.
Folks, do you have an active and potent Junto? It's proven time and again people with strong Junto succeed at a rate far more than any other group. So what is your Junto? It's your social support group. How do you know if you have the Junto that maximizes your potential? Go to JuntoX.com. It's not your typical internet social marketing tool. JuntoX.com will confidentially help you evaluate and improve your Junto. Your profile remains yours. Multiply the power of your Junto at JuntoX.com. JUNTOX.com.
Nearly everyone loves Italian food, but those people who love true, authentic Italian go to Cafe Positano. It's because owner and chef Pasquale Barba offers home-cooked food from his hometown, Positano, Italy. He is Italian. Local fresh items are combined with rare ingredients imported only from Italy, along with generations-old family recipes. Whether it's pizza or those delicious daily specials, taste for yourself at Cafe Positano, 4 miles west of I-4 on 436. 407-774-8080. The most authentic Italian food in Central Florida.
Hi, I'm Scott Miller from MyLibertyThreads.com. I've developed an American-made t-shirt brand that helps conservative Americans express themselves. I've traveled the country extensively over the last 3 years, helping proud Americans everywhere get their points across. As friends of the American Adversaries program, we're offering promotion for all the listeners of this show. All you have to do is check out our website at MyLibertyThreads.com and enter promo code AAR2014 on any purchase you make, and you'll save $3. That's $3 just by entering AAR2014, all caps. That's MyLibertyThreads.com, and remember, American-made t-shirts just feel better.
Joseph Gallagher is registered with AN Securities, offered through Covax Securities Incorporated, 6451 North Federal Highway, Suite 1, Fort Lauderdale, Florida, 33308. Member FINRA, SIPC. Advisory services offered through Covax Advisors Incorporated. Gallagher Group Health Management is not affiliated with Covax Securities Incorporated or Covax Advisors Incorporated.
Folks, it's a new economy, so get a new perspective on your finances. Like many people, your concerns may be the protection of your money and lifestyle. The new year is the right time to take a fresh look at your financial picture and see if it still meets your specific needs. No matter where your journey begins, you can achieve financial independence. Call Joe Gallagher today. The conversation is free. 407-347-2902. 407-347-2902.
Hi, I'm Chris Hart of the American Adversaries, and I want to tell you about our new sponsor, Refresh Computers. At Refresh Computers, you can get a powerful, fully loaded Refresh HP or Dell computer system and save a bundle. You'll get the commercial-grade HP or Dell computer, 17-inch LCD monitor, keyboard, mouse, and Windows 7 installed, all for just $199. Laptops start at just $199. Refresh Computers is the home of the largest selection and lowest prices on name-brand computers and laptops. Find what you need at huge savings at Refresh Computers. Call 407-478-8200 or go to refreshcomputers.net.
Nearly here from Vacation Travel Planners, a member of Cruise Planners, with the latest vacation deals, like Bahama Cruises from $149 per person. How about a 7-night Caribbean cruise over spring break, starting at $379 per person? Princess is celebrating their 50th anniversary in 2015 with lots of extra specials for their clients, including Alaska 7-night cruises from $599, Caribbean 7-night cruises from $549 per person, or a Norwegian Fjord 7-night cruise from $999 per person, 4-night Caribbean cruise from $299 per person. Last chance to cruise the Explorer of the Seas out of Port Canaveral before she leaves in early March for Europe. Rates start from $344 per person. How about an 8-day escorted tour of Italy from Rome to Milan from $1,699 per person? Give us a call at 321-251-4777. That's 321-251-4777. Or visit us at vacationtravelplanners.com. Keep listening for new travel specials. Bon voyage!
Oh, yeah!
Hi, everyone. This is Sunny, the California girl from Gorgeous Ladies of Wrestling. We're all champions in the ring, including all the hottest guys on American Adversaries. Love ya.
They're going to check.
All right. We love y'all, folks. Johnny Guns is engrossed in the game here.
I'm doing play-by-play.
Yeah, it is down to the last 3 minutes or so. Denver is trailing 24-13.
That's right.
But they have the ball and are driving down the field. All right, so we'll keep you updated on the game. And plus, Johnny's got some WTF news if we can pry him away from the game here. So we're going to give him a few minutes first by going to Mike from Pine Hills. Mike, thank you for calling. We appreciate you being out there, sir.
Thank you. Since the United States was not one of the representatives in France, if the president had said somebody, would he been going against his own thoughts of how Al-Qaeda, wasn't a viable force anymore.
Yeah, the junior varsity and all that stuff.
Yeah.
That could be that could possibly be part of it. Yeah, he is finding himself. If anybody's been paying any attention, they're seeing that he's losing this war on terror and losing it remarkably fast. Because you have all of these groups, and including Al Qaeda. You're absolutely right about that, Mike. That might have been some of the thinking that went into it. In my mind, the vice president at least should have been there today. What else has Biden got to do, for heaven's sake, anyway? Maybe they didn't want him going over there because he might shoot off his big, stupid mouth, but there should have been maybe the Secretary of State. Someone should have been there today as a show of solidarity with France. And I think that perhaps what you say was part of the political calculation, yes. It would have been sort of an admission of their being wrong. So very, very good point there, Mike. Mike, I don't recognize your voice. Have you ever called the show before?
Oh, I have, yes.
Okay. Have you gotten a bottle of Roxy Pacifics?
I have. I live on one of the streets that you like.
Okay. All right. Well, I appreciate it. All right. Well, listen, thank you for calling, and keep listening, and keep calling. We appreciate you being out there.
Thank you.
And but, you know, he does raise a point, and that is that this administration, this all of this stuff isn't supposed to be happening. Barack Obama was supposed to have cleaned all this mess up.
Well, they were supposed to like him and his new approach to the world.
Yeah. Yeah, that's right. Remember, he's got
to schmooze it all over.
He's got the gift of schmooze. And speaking of the gift of schmooze, let's go to the biggest gift of schmooze that we could ever find. And that would be, of course, Johnny Guns. Johnny,
what's going on? Schmooze off your face, sir.
First of all, what's going on with the game?
Well, right now, Denver had a 4th-and-4. They came up short. However, they're challenging the rule on the field, so right now the officials are reviewing the play.
What, they're challenging where the spot on the ball
is? They're challenging where the spot on the ball is. If the ruling is overturned, then Denver will have a first down and their drive will continue.
If it is not overturned, then they most likely are going to lose the game.
Then it looks like Indianapolis is pull off the win.
All right, well, while there's a bit of a pause in the action there, how about some action here?
All right, let's do some WTF news, ladies and gentlemen. We'll start across the pond, where a British children's charity has unveiled an animated video aimed at educating kids about the dangers of sending salacious and scandalous pictures. The name of the video is called I Saw Your Willy. Now, I think, are they referring to the whale from the 1990s?
Free Willy.
I've always
wanted a Free Willy.
I think that's what it is.
I don't think so.
Well, no. You know what? That's what I'm going to assume they're talking about, okay? The National Society for the Prevention of Cruelty to Children posted the video to their YouTube and Facebook account and features the cautionary tale of a young boy named Alex, who sends a picture of his whale to a friend only to have it go viral.
Whale if he's lucky, right?
Whale, yeah.
Whale, yeah.
What a whale of a... whale of a tale to tell you, lads.
The boy runs like a minnow for this poor kid.
The boy runs through his town only to be confronted at each turn by people shouting, I saw your willy! And a bully texts Alex in the video, your willy is rubbish. Boy, those English can be.
That really hurts.
Right. The video was created as part of the charity's Share Aware campaign, which aims to raise awareness of the dangers of sharing personal information and revealing pictures online via smartphones. The campaign's website posts this message on their Facebook page. We tell our children to share, but online it's different. So kids, print out the pictures and show them to your friends.
Well, I heard the Man
but
Boy
don't
Love
do
Association.
It via cell phone.
Yeah, I heard the Man Boy Love Association was just all for this. Like, yeah, we want Willie shown everywhere.
I'm sure PETA will get involved about the whales. All right, now off the air, I was telling you guys about the University of Pikesville.
Yes.
This fall, the University of Pikesville in Kentucky will become the second college to offer athletic scholarships for playing, anybody?
Video games.
Video games is correct.
Yep.
Robert Morris University was the first school to make what they are calling esports an official sport, specifically playing the game League of Legends. Boy, I want to get Mike McBath's opinion on this, yes. Don't you?
I think we should. He'll be in Tuesday night.
Oh, goodness. We definitely have to ask him. Or I'll get Nostradamus to ask him, one of the two.
Yes, definitely.
The game pits 10 players competing to get the other person's base. Scholarship recipients will begin League of Legends competition play in the fall and even have scrimmages. As far as practices and games go, students will have to play together, but they won't have to be together, which means luckily the, quote, student athletes, unquote, can practice and, again, I'm using air quotes here, compete while sitting in their parents' basement in their underwear eating Cheetos at midnight.
The picture of athleticism.
That's right. Said new media director Bruce Parsons, it will be a regime a lot like athletics. They'll have to maintain a certain GPA, and we'll look at them as student athletes, even though they will look nothing like student athletes. Parsons said about 20 scholarships will be available.
Oh, boy, are they going to get the sweater with a letter on it and all that stuff?
Goodness. Can you imagine?
They have an award for the biggest pimple, don't they?
Can you imagine if PEDs come into that sport? I can't wait for drugs to infiltrate esports.
Really. Yeah.
All right, let's finish.
Amphetamines.
Let's finish tonight talking about something that's even less a sport than League of Legends, and that's soccer.
Is that a sport?
I will say this. I had a coach back in high school. He coached the baseball team, and there were some players on the baseball team that also played soccer.
Sure.
And they missed practices because they were at soccer games.
Uh-oh.
A coach would look at me under his breath and goes, soccer, it's a communist sport.
He's right! He's absolutely right!
Now, I will say
all that effort for so little result.
That's
It's got to be communism, right?
Watching a sport that ends in 0-0.
All that running around for nothing for it.
You get a good nap. You get a good nap during
now,
a
I will
soccer
say,
game.
This story,
no wonder the fans get drunk and rowdy. There's nothing else to do, for heaven's sake.
Now, this final story actually makes me want to play a little soccer.
Oh?
Belgian soccer team Royal Antwerp had a rather cheeky shooting drill this past week.
Uh-oh.
In an effort to sharpen their skills, the team swapped their goalkeeper for some glamour models. The two models were dressed in a shirt and clad in their undies. They stood facing the goal with their backsides to the players, who took turns kicking the balls in an effort to improve their accuracy by drilling the derrieres of the two scantily clad beauties.
Oh, my.
After the practice, ladies got their chance to get some payback on the players by getting to take a free shot at the men. Now, being a good investigative journalist as I am, I've watched this, you know, countless number of times.
Oh, yes.
And my favorite part is the reaction of a player who has this guilty look on his face after he kicks the ball, it hits the girl right in the butt, and he's just got this look like, I'm so sorry.
But she had a big smile on her face.
Oh.
I'm
there
not
you go.
Gonna go anywhere near that one. Okay, thank you, Johnny Guns.
You're welcome.
Cracked a smile.
Easy does it. What happened on this game? Did they rule on the field there?
It looks like Indianapolis won the challenge. They got the ball back. They have since given it back to Denver. 1:52 on the clock. Denver out of timeout, still trails 24-13.
All right, looking pretty good for the Indianapolis Colts, who will go to, if they should hang on to win, will go to New England to play the Patriots. All right, real quick, we just have a minute and a half left in this segment. I just want to talk to you about the taste of life. The tastes of life has been killed by the minimum wage increase in Michigan. What was the tastes of life? It was a popular restaurant that gave a chance for people who were dealing with drug and alcohol addiction and homelessness a place to have a job and kind of more or less get back into the swing of things. And it was run by an organization called Life Challenges of Michigan, which is a nonprofit. And once again, it was used as a sort of a halfway house restaurant, if you will, to get people who were coming out of, you know, hitting rock bottom to try to get them back into the mainstream of society. It was very, very popular, very successful. But when Michigan raised its minimum wage to $8.15, it killed the taste of life because it could no longer be a functioning restaurant. It would have had to raise prices too much for their customer, their clientele to accommodate, and it just created all kind of challenges. And so the raise of the minimum wage has killed the taste of life. Yeah, that's what happens.
Isn't government wonderful, Chris?
When government gets in the way, the rest of us suffer for it. All right, folks, when we come back, it's time for Lair's closing comments. All right, of course, that's Mark Merrow. He was on our show this past Wednesday. Now, tomorrow, we're going to have Abe Katzman. He's our regular from Jerusalem, of course. Tuesday, Eric Donlin. He's written a great book that you're going to want to hear about. Mike McBath is going to be on the show. Wednesday, Colonel Danny McKnight. Thursday, John L. That's John L. Casey. Friday, we're going to have Dr. K, of course, and Mike Smith from Just Toys Classic Cars. Looks pretty good for Indianapolis, right, Johnny?
Peyton Manning will be watching the Super Bowl on his couch just like me. Colts win 24-13.
All right. All right. So the Colts are going to New England to play the Patriots. Right now, we're going to sit right here and listen to Lair Adams' closing comments.
All right. Thank you, buddy. You know what really lets all the air out of your ego balloon? When you mention an item you remember from your past to a younger person, and they look at you with that look of total disbelief and say, huh? That's what happened the other day when I brought up something I thought everyone was aware of. A simple hyphenated substance or effect called Day-Glow. Of course, you remember Day-Glow paints and posters. It was an integral part of my development. Well, or maybe just a symbol. I was describing Day-Glow to a person of one of the generations younger than me and mine. Since now I can't say the younger generation, people will say which one. Anyway, I explained Day-Glow was invented by an age group that wasn't satisfied with normal colors. Red, blue, yellow, purple, green, and all the rainbow colors weren't pop enough for a culture that had to change and better everything. So new colors that unnaturally and artificially glowed had to be created. All of the visual arts had been too bland for a post-war generation with lots of cash. A new, exciting market of blacklight posters and velvet paintings had its birth at this time. Soon they would blend all three, velvet, Day-Glow, and blacklight, to produce art forever unmatched in its tackiness. Come on, who couldn't fall in love with the dogs playing poker tapestry or those beautiful velvet paintings of Elvis? Tell me. If you've ever seen art in an art museum pop out at you like the shiny tears in the king's eyes that the black light excites so wonderfully? Soon the Virgin Mary got her own likeness on velvet. But alas, this art trend is lost on today's young. They don't understand that our era brought about such life-altering marvels as bead curtains, macrame, and of course, tie-dye. The first response from the youngers, oh, you mean hippies? Which they say with a half sneer, half admiration, since much of new culture was the basis for theirs. Yeah, I guess I mean the hippie culture. For a while, my hair was down to my, where it certainly was a pain in the to hassle with. But today, the gaudy Day-Glow is gone, except for traffic and emergency use. Hey, it served a purpose. Macrame and tie-dyed clothes are manufactured by machines today. Some kids don't know who the Beatles were, and that's okay. Because I know somewhere in the near future, some youngster will say, who the heck is Justin Bieber? Hold on to your past, my friends, but welcome the future. And have a great week.
All right, great work there, Larry. Great work. You talked about bead curtains. That reminded me, some people back in the day that you were talking about would make curtains out of beer cans.
Pop tabs, yes. I talked about that.
Yes, yeah. And I remember my mom and I went over to one of her friends' houses one day, and she had some of those curtains, and I grabbed my mom and I yanked on. I was only about 9 or 10. And I grabbed my mom and I yanked on her elbow, and she was standing there talking to her friend. And I said, "Wow, she sure drinks a lot of beer, doesn't she?" So you see, folks, I got my big mouth a long time ago.
That soggy foot from being in your mouth so much.
Saying provocative things is nothing new with me. All right. Before we get out of here, we're going to play you a little song today. It's by Charlie Daniels Band. It's called "Back in America," and it's kind of I think it's an uplifting song, and it kind of talks about America coming back. You know, facing the challenges and not the shying away from them anymore. So let's just hope that perhaps the world is feeling the same thing, in particular after this terrorist act in Paris, where the liberals finally get it, that Muslims hate them just as much, if not more, than anybody else. Unfortunately, it took this attack to sort of bring that about in their way of thinking, but such is the nature of life, I guess. Also, folks, as you heard, Diane was on our show earlier. She was our first official recruit. Now Tim from Castleberry is our first recruit, but because we didn't open up the website on the exact time when we thought it did, we opened it later, and then Diane was the first recruit when we officially opened the new website.
They're both heroes.
Recruiting office. They are both heroes to us because they were so anxious to join the American Adversaries Army.
Mm-hmm.
And so we would like you to join the American Adversaries Army, too. It's real easy. You just go to AmericanAdversariesRadio.com, and two choices will pop, and one will take you to our homepage, which is free. We invite you. We encourage you to go there. We're doing blogs now every day there and got new stuff up there every day. Or you can go to the recruiting office and sign up as a member of the American Adversaries Army. It only costs $5 a month. And we also have a donation a place there to help us keep this show going, for one, and to take it to bigger and better place, not leave here, but you know what I'm saying, do more with it. And please, we need your help. AmericanAdversariesRadio.com is where you can do that. And by the way, you will be also getting coupons from Cafe Positano and our other sponsors as well. And
it's well worth it.
Yeah,
you're going to be entered into contests where you can have dinner with us. You'll be able to go to NFL meetings, compliments of Mike McBath, and we got some other stuff in mind too. So please take advantage of it. And thank you for taking advantage of listening to our show. Please take advantage of the John Butler Book Show. He's coming up right now, up the dial at 950 WTLN. It'll be another great show, I'm sure. And don't forget to come back and join us tomorrow night live at 5. So we're going to leave you now with this is called "Back in America" by the Charlie Daniels Band. And you can't get much more patriotic than them guys. All right, so folks, enjoy your Sunday evening. Go Colts.
Yeah.
Night, everybody. Jeff?
Well, the eagle's been flying slow, and the flag's been flying low, and a lot of people saying that America's fixing to fall. But speaking just for me and some people from Tennessee, we got a thing or two to tell you all. This lady may have stumbled, but she ain't never failed. And if the Russians don't believe that, they can all go straight to hell. We're gonna put her feet back on the path of righteousness, and then God bless America again. And you never did think that it ever would happen again. In America, did you? You never did think that we'd ever get together again. We're damn sure fooled you. We're walking real proud and we're talking real loud again. In America, you never did think that it ever would happen again. From the sound up in Long Island, out the
San Francisco Bay, and everything that's in between them is our home. And we may have done a little bit of fighting amongst ourselves, but you outside people best leave us alone. 'Cause we'll all stick together, and you can take that to the bank. That's the cowboys and the hippies and the rebels and the Yanks. You just go and lay your hand on the Pittsburgh Steelers fan, and I think you're gonna finally understand. And you never did think that it ever would happen again in America, did you? You never did think that we'd ever get together again. But we damn sure would. You were walking real proud and we're talking real loud again. In America, you never did think that it ever would have happened again.
Service of Salem Communications. Intelligent, conservative, AM 660.